Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
So a clean sweep for the Irish Provinces is the short version. Exeter 8, Leinster 18 yesterday evening in Pool 3 means Leinster are on 14 points in Pool 3 with Exeter and Montpellier. He took 5 points against Glasgow, both on 8 points. So it was a really important win for Leinster. And then in Pool 4, Munster in control. They're on 11 points with Castor on 7 points and Leicester and Racing both on 6. They beat Leicester 33 points to 10 in Thomond on Saturday. And then at the Stoop in the snow, Ulster 17 points to 5 winners over Harlequins. La Rochelle had a bonus point win in their game, so they're still very much in control of Pool 1 on 15 points with Ulster on 8. And then Connacht were 16 points down after 30 minutes in their Challenge Cup game away to Breve, and largely through the efforts of Jack Cardy came back to win that game against Breve 38 points to 31. So a ridiculous win for Connacht under the circumstances. We have Andy Dunn here in studio. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Joe.
And Dunica O'Callaghan, hello.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Very well. So we might start, we might work our way back in some kind of chronological order. Last night, Leinster 18 points to 8 winners over Exeter. It was Johnny Sexton with the first and Jack Conan with the second tries for Leinster on 71 minutes. This was an odd game in many ways. Like, by the 18th minute, it was still nil all, even though Leinster may very well have scored 2 tries and spent another 5, 6, 7 minutes with scrum after scrum after scrum under the posts, to the point where Harry Williams, their tight head, was sin-binned and Thomas Francis had to come on, and then Exeter won one against the head and suddenly booted away. And it was the most unbelievable nil-all after 18 minutes I'd seen in some time, Dunica.
Yeah, it was. It was great. I'll be honest with you. I feel like I can nearly get myself checked out at the moment. I'm slowly becoming a Leinster fan. It was it was just a real top-quality European game where everything mattered, and I think you nailed it. That the scrum out of both Keane Healy and Tyke Furlong, and their play, the way they played around the pitch was just incredible. I thought it was a big game, but they never left Exeter get into their shape. I was just watching it back. It's like 60 minutes before Exeter get into what we'd known in the Premiership of that kind of pattern, the way they play. They play edge to edge, and they eventually scored off it. But until then, Leinster just starved them of the ball. Halfbacks did an incredible job. I know Johnny always gets the credit he deserves, but I thought Luke McGrath was incredible. He just controlled territories. Box kicking was really good. And he was dangerous around the base of the ruck. And even in the kicking game, when he got the ball, he was brilliant. I just thought he had a fantastic game. And I thought, you know, for me, you know Exeter, you know going there, it's really tough. But to hold them out, especially in that goal zone close to the line, I just think Leinster are executing everything really well at the moment. They're actually great to watch.
Yeah. They held Exeter out a few times. Like, there was a kind of 4 or 5 minute spell just before half time where, again, it was Exeter effectively under the post around the try line for several minutes, and they held them out and almost cheered it like a score. And then there was one shortly after halftime as well when Leinster had 14 men, Cronin was sin-binned, and they held them out both times. Is that, yeah. I mean, that kind of seems, when Exeter are doing that, just picking and going, Andy, just picking and going, not even giving you a hint they're going to do anything else other than pick and go. Is that ultimately about organisation? It doesn't seem like it is. It seems this is more, we know what they're going to do here. This is just an arm wrestle.
Yeah, I think Dunica's point about it took them 60 minutes to get into their shape, their established pattern of play going from wide to wide. That being disrupted by Leinster's belligerence, you know, their organisation and defence and their physicality. When that Exeter style was disrupted by Leinster, very difficult place to score from in the opposition 22. In terms of space on the field, the opposition need to keep one player max in the ruck to avoid a guy going through the middle. And other than that, you're talking about a line of 14 players.
Yeah,
14 guys with nowhere to go. I mean, if the ball is slow on that ruck, you pick and go around the edges, you end up watching pretty turgid rugby in terms of how Exeter were trying to attack.
It wasn't even like Exeter were especially looking for quick ball either.
No.
You know, it was fairly plodding.
If you win a ruck ball 1 yard from the opposition try line and you actually try and move it wide against a flat line of 14 players or 7 and 7 on each side, the odds are by the time you pass it 10 yards backwards, you're going to get smashed 10 yards from where you started.
Okay.
So there's no gain in trying to run it wide that close to the line. The issue for Exeter in attack was that they couldn't be creative further out on the field. So they didn't have not many clean line breaks, which then means they're going against a disorganised defence.
Yeah. On the the two tries Leinster may or may not have had, so the Sexton one, whether his foot is in touch or not, Dunica, that's just a judgment call, and you know, maybe it's difficult to give. On the Toner try, yeah. Roman Poit, yeah. So we don't actually see the ball being grounded by Toner. The issue seems to have been maybe with Poit's question, try, yes or no, because the touch judge comes back and says, yeah, it's try. And Poit seems to say, well, hang on, did you see the ball being grounded? And the touch judge is trying to say, like, well, you know, no, I didn't. But I mean, there's literally no other physical possibility here. It was definitely grounded. And Poit says, you didn't see it being grounded. We're going back for 5 meter scrum. So is the issue there with Poit and his question, or what's the issue?
Yeah, I think so. I think definitely for me, I think you should favour the attacking team. Mm. It's just, Joe, you've got to take into account how intimidating these places are. And when you're playing away from home, you don't get those decisions. I even thought Johnny's was a bit harsh. I just thought, you know, I thought there's no clear indication of his foot and touch. Mm. But that's what happens away from home. You know, there was a line out perceived to gone in crooked. I didn't see it either. They're just the small margins you don't get. And I'll be honest, as a second, I was kind of nearly gutted for Dave because I thought he'd done a great job of getting that down.
It seems like we all know there's a lot at stake in these games. The issue for Roman Poit's question that he asked, like, that needs to be tidied up for him. From a regulation point of view, or from whoever is deciding that that's a feasible question to ask, it's pretty it's like trying to book Ryanair online. You know, have I paid for travel insurance, or I don't even know, do I not tick the box for yes or no? You know, you end up going in circles. He's asking such a complicated question. The crowd are getting behind him. The touch judge is kind of saying he's given the try or seen it, but
is try yes or no not a very simple question?
Well, did he not ask, have you seen?
Well, he said try yes or no. And certainly the commentary team, Dunica, on BT were suggesting he should have asked, is there any reason I can't award this try?
Yeah.
But he went try, yes or no. And the touch judge tried to help him out. He was trying to say, no, it is. But I mean, I didn't see the ball going down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could argue it was on Poit to ask a better question.
Yeah.
Now, look, he mightn't have seen enough.
There's
to
a little
feel
bit of ambiguity around the questioning that's asked in a pretty, you know, pressure cooker environment. You're standing in a dead ball area. There's 20 cameras on you. You're watching replays.
It's a mass of bodies. He mightn't have felt comfortable enough to say, is there any reason I can't award it? He might have felt that was going too far. But I think the issue for, I think, a lot of people is when the touch judge comes back and says, yeah, look, it's a try. I think in that case, Dunica, Poit has to kind of go with the guy who's watched the replays a couple of dozen times.
I totally agree. I think that's what's probably happening. You know, it goes up on the screen. The ref on the pitch has a look at it, has his own view on it. I think as soon as they kick it on upstairs, nearly the power should be taken out of their hands and they should just be given the decision. Another thing is it needs to speed up. TMOs, what are they at like? Are they making a cup of tea between every decision? It's just, when you compare it to State of Origin, they nearly have an answer within 30 seconds. You know, it's just, I think it's an area of rugby. Everyone complains about the scrummaging, but the length of time TMO decisions are taking, and then the interference when it comes back for a ref to make a decision again. I think it's just, it's a bit all over the place and needs tidying up within the game. But just to go back to the point you made about Exeter and when they get into that, what we'd call the goal zone and pick and jam kind of momentum, it's really, really, really hard to stop them, Joe, there. You know, we practice it the whole time. And it's when you come up against them, it's like you don't need to miss a tattle for them to score because they pick on one defender, they have the ball carrier, and they have a player inside and outside. So it's nearly like six legs versus two, you know.
Right.
It's really, really hard to stop. And the best way I can say it is, like, you don't have to have a blatant miss for them to score. And especially with the new rule about not being able to put your hands down across the line, makes it really difficult.
Okay, so Leinster deserve a lot of credit to keep them out there.
Oh, and that's where you saw them celebrating just before halftime. That was a massive moment because everyone practices against Exeter for that moment. and they still score. Whereas Exeter, you know, they know themselves there's momentum shifts in game, and that was a massive one.
By midway through the second half, and you feel like Leinster should be out of sight. It's 8 points apiece, and it's two huge kind of. It's not like the expansive Leinster rugby that gets them over the line. It's a penalty which comes after 30 phases, and the Conan try comes after 44 phases in the 71st minute, and that's ultimately how Leinster win this game. So, like, if you compare, Dunica, the opening 12-15 minutes where Leinster were kind of playing more open rugby, it turned into more of an arm wrestle in that second half. They had to win it a different way.
Yeah, they did, and they were able to do it, to be fair to them. I must say, I thought Exeter were poor, especially their back line. I think 100% Leinster put them under pressure, but did an awful lot of unforced errors themselves that really cost them, I felt. Like, Leinster made one error probably in the first half, down that short side with Eason Nasiwa and Luke McGrath kind of messing up. And then the pressure's on for maybe 8 minutes. In European big games, one mistake costs you. And I just felt Exeter's backs will be kicking themselves because they just didn't execute. Some of it was really easy for Leinster. It was just poor passing, knock-ons. When they finally got into shape, they scored. And they'll know that, you know, if we could have done that earlier, we're in the game.
So that's very uncharacteristic from this team, which are top of the Premiership, I presume.
Yeah, it is. It is. Exeter, they're known for how well they're drilled. Rob Baxter, probably one of the best coaches in the league. And the big thing I've noticed is when we play against them, it's the speed of transition in which they attack you. So that's real kind of jargon, but it's like they practice their plays so well throughout the preseason and the week of the game that they execute brilliantly come match day. But I just found their execution terrible, especially in the first 20 minutes.
Right. Well, it's the first time they've lost at Sandy Park in a year. It was Bordeaux this day last year, beat them. The tackle count was 222 tackles, Andy, from Exeter to Leinster's 94.
I would have played in the last 2 years of my career down in Connacht. At a time when Connacht weren't as successful as they are now. And sometimes we're the whipping boys and finished in or around bottom of the table for 6-7 seasons in a row. So it could have been at times a miserable enough existence. But what we often noticed in our own analysis after games at that stage was our tackle count was 3-4 times higher than everyone else, and still wondering, well, how are we losing? It's not for lack of commitment. It's not for lack of physicality. The reality is, your ability to break a game up in attack and be creative reduces your tackle count. I think Exeter did struggle to break a gain line, to slice the team, to offload in the tackle, to do some of the things that are more typical now. They're more typically required to break up a top level European game, other than running through what you're strategically have been practicing. So, you know, I fully understand where Dunnock is coming from. Their style of game that has worked in the Premiership again and again over quite a sustained period of time. I think you do require that little bit more creativity to win really kind of tough, you know, nearly knockout group games in Europe. Somebody like Stints, and it's probably why he's never pushed on to compete with the likes of Johnny.
Well, if you're to be frank about it, Leinster just looked like they had better ball players, better skills, better running, better movement, better everything. They're just better players all
over.
They
were better creative players, and that's why they held out. But one thing Dunica briefly mentioned there was Luke McGrath. He doesn't get a huge amount of credit because there are lots of guys around him who are super players too, but he's a huge threat on the ball. He's got a really, really high try scoring ratio. His passing is probably the weaker part of his game, but he's worked on it. And I think he actually represents something slightly different in the fact that Leinster found a different way to win away from home. You know, I actually backed Exeter during the week because I thought, I'm not sure if this Leinster team, with some of the new players coming through, some of the older guys, have they got a way to go out and win that's kind of ugly at times? And they showed that. I think Luke McGrath represents that. He's part of the younger crew coming through in Leinster. He's got great leadership qualities. We all will remember the time he took pressure off Sexton in the England game in Aviva last year. It started to rain, there was 5 minutes left. He said, I'm going to take pressure off Johnny Sexton. He was, you know, it was one of his first and most important perform or starts for or coming off the bench for Ireland rather, and he took a a box kick into the corner, went outside of Joe Schmidt's prescriptive playing pattern and kicked it into the corner and changed the course of the game. He's a guy who represents a different way. Leinster finding a different way to win, much like what Munster were doing 15 years ago.
You go on. Final word on Leinster.
Yeah, just on that point, I think I totally agree. I think with Luke McGrath, we phoned a proper understudy to Conor Murray, which we badly need. He was brilliant, but
has he jumped ahead in Marmion in the pecking order?
If he's playing that type of rugby, he needs to. But just on your point about Leinster looking dominant, I totally agree. But I think it's down to fatigue levels. You look at Exeter's running to that game. They played Bath and Saracens. Mm. Whereas Leinster had the Dragons and Treviso. Same with Munster. Munster played the Ospreys and Zebra. Whereas in the Premiership, Leicester had Wasps and ourselves, which was the biggest game of our year. So I know everyone's going on 3-0 to the Irish teams over, but you're not comparing like with like. These guys are playing level. I actually think, and Donner, you know better than anyone, the Premiership is incredibly physical, week in, week out. And when you look at those type of games, no wonder guys are fresher, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. They're clearly starting to win that argument with you, the Pro 14 Premiership argument in the canteen table, the way you're talking.
They are. Look, you can only fight it for so much. But when someone makes the example that Ben Youngs has played every game for Leicester this year, and Conor Murray has played 6 matches. So, it's a wider debate. It goes into even when we're chatting about why players should stay in Ireland. You might get bigger money, but are you going to be looked after, you know?
Mm. Well, let's go on to Ben Youngs and Leicester then. So, Munster 33 points to 10 winners over Leicester. They're on 11 points in Pool 4, which is 4 clear of cast. And Leicester and Racing are both 5 points back on 6 points. It's a bonus point win. Tries from Reece Marshall, Zebo, O'Mahony, and Chris Clute, who a really good game. Probably the first time, Dunica, a lot of people would have seen Clute. He's short. He's playing flanker. He's not a big man, but he's busy.
Yeah, he is. He's an old school 7 kind of. I'm trying to stay away from it, but I'm going to say he's that kind of groundhog that, the Brusso in South Africa covers over the ball, and he's really hard to remove from there. You know, we saw Tom Youngs nearly. He probably should have got a yellow for coming really close to rolling him out by the neck, but there isn't a whole lot of room to catch him anywhere else. You know, he's
similar to Neil Back, ironically.
Yeah.
So this was 20-0 after half an hour, 23 points to 3 at half time. We'll get on to Matt O'Connor's comments in a moment, but you might just sum up the overall Munster performance here, Dunic. I know you were at the game. I was watching you on BT freezing on the sideline. So a lot of this boiled down to the breakdown, it seemed. Like the turnover count was overwhelmingly in Munster's favour. Matt O'Connor afterwards, one of the things he said was that Munster were allowed to be cynical and in the way they slowed down the ball. You made the point on TV that maybe Jerome Garcés refereed the breakdown differently to what Leicester might be used to. So the Munster performance overall and the breakdown, because that seemed to be pretty key.
Yeah, the Munster performance was really good. Look, I won't take away from the fact that it looked like Leicester didn't get off the bus. They were awful, especially the first 20 minutes. And coming into it, I was massively nervous. I just thought with new coach, contracts, it was a potential banana skin with Leicester getting hammered there last year as well. But I just thought they were really, really poor. And the breakdown was where it was at. And I totally agree with Matt O'Connor. I think in the Premiership, week in, week out, the poach and steal by Peter O'Mahony, and there was one more by Chris Clute, that they're penalties in the Premiership. But I think there's an onus on him.
You might do your best. I mean, let's not have people falling asleep, but to explain on radio, I know it's not easy. What did O'Mahony and Clute do that wouldn't be allowed in the Premiership?
In the Premiership, it would have been seen like they were cleaning beyond the ball and then the ruck was knocking them back over it. Or in Pete's case, that he wasn't the arriving player and that the ruck had nearly been formed around him and had no rights. You would have seen it a bit with Exeter as well. It's like as if you're nearly allowed when you're attacking breakdown. And what I felt is that Leicester just didn't adapt and play to the ref. And a big thing as well, I think, you know, Matt O'Connor has to take responsibility for preparation for the game. And big thing you always do is you judge the ref and how he refs the breakdown. So you'd go over maybe his last 4 or 5 games and see this guy's loose at the breakdown.
And was it more of a Pro 14 interpretation by Garcés, or actually would Munster have adapted as well?
Munster adapted. Okay. And that was the fright for me. It just became a free-for-all. And it was like Munster said, well, if this is open season at the breakdown, let's go.
Right.
Whereas that's what surprised me about Leicester. That bit of dog, the bit of cheese, the kneel-back scenarios, the guys that, you know, they maybe wait till they're penalised twice and then ask, okay, maybe I have to pull it back.
Yeah.
They were just too squeaky clean. And, you know, Matt O'Connor seemed really frustrated after the match. But bar Tom Youngs, I didn't see any of the rest of the Leicester guys really all that put out by it on the pitch, you know. Like Youngs's reaction on those keynotes is that's how you get when you're being beaten at the breakdown. It's massively frustrating, you know. And I think, you know, his penalties were more out of frustration than anything else.
If we were going to develop what Dunica mentioned there in terms of the responsibility or the onus on the backroom staff of any professional side is to have, you know, up-to-date analysis. There's so many variables when you analyse a team from the previous week, whether it's changes in selection, you analyse a team's mistakes from the week before, the odds are they're sitting in a room analysing them also and being absolutely damn sure they're not going to make the same mistake twice. So, you know, to be very plain and simple, if you design your attack strategy around the mistakes Leicester made the previous week, it's not that wise a move. But the one common denominator that you can deal with if you're looking over a period of time is the referee. And you can look at the likes of Garcés and see what's his profile, what does he tend to be lenient on, what does he really work on? Because the referees do have
tendencies.
You know, tendencies, and they've got styles. The referees with and without certain leniency in certain areas. But it looked very apparent to me, and I think Dunica just suggested the same, that they had no real grasp on how he was going to referee the breakdown, how lenient he was, and they didn't respond. And that's not so much for the guys in the heat of battle, I think. That could be down to the fact that their analysis didn't suggest that.
Right. Well, the referee on Sunday at Welford Road is going to be Matthew Reynal. So he's obviously going to have a big bearing on proceedings. The other point from Matt O'Connor, I'm curious to know what you make of this, because I don't know, this seemed just frankly wrong to me. So Andrew Conway was taken off for the clash with Tolosa Villeneuve. And so Conway went to tackle him and smashed his face into Villeneuve and broke his jaw, it turns out. Vianney walked off the pitch, he was spitting blood. He even bent down to see if it looked like Conway had come off worse initially. So O'Connor afterwards said Conway smashed Vianney in his face with his head. And I saw it was Gavin Comiskey in the Irish Times journal said, "What are you saying?" And O'Connor says, "You saw it, I saw it. Duty of care, isn't there?" And then he was pressed again and O'Connor said, "Well, one guy's got a broken jaw. That's what I'm annoyed about. Surely there's a duty of care. How is it not a high tackle when he clashed heads and smashed him in his face with his head? We're talking about seatbelt tackles, which are an absolute non-event, and a bloke's got a broken jaw." This was put to Van Graan afterwards. He said, "No, I've got no comment on that." Is O'Connor out of order here, Dunica?
I don't know if he's out of order, but I can sense I can see where his frustration is coming from. Yeah. If you have Tolosa Villeneuve in your team, we've played against him for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
He's incredible, Joe. He's an X-factor player. He scores, tries, no one else in the league scores. Mm-hmm. He's incredible footwork. And he just, I think Matt O'Connor is seeing one of his best players out for the season. And he's thinking, you know, where am I going to pick up the 8 tries he's going to get for the rest of the year, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's a bit of frustration in that, but I think it's kind of coming maybe to the more and more like soccer, where he sees that as an asset now that he doesn't have anymore, because there's this grey area of collisions in the air still, you know? And
Did Conway not obey a certain duty of care in the way he went at him?
No, I don't agree. I think it was a collision in the air. It's just what happens. Like, granted, if Andy had hit him with his elbow, which happened in the Connacht game. Well, that's different. Mm. But this was just a knock and a bang. But I could see where Matt O'Connor is coming from. I would be livid if I'd lost that player as well. And I would be looking for nearly anything to blame. But it's just, I think you sense the pressure on coaches, on management, on medics. But when you lose quality players like that, of course he's frustrated.
I want to quickly squeeze in your thoughts on Ulster. Is there anything else that struck you watching in Thomond about the overall performance with a view to Welford Road this weekend, Dunica?
I just think it's going to be spiky on the return. I saw Matt O'Connor, obviously you heard his comments, but even around the tunnel after the game, he was livid. Jordan, you know, just saw in commentary him leading a team talk in the dressing room. I think, you know, everyone's going on about Chris Clote, and, you know, they wouldn't have done a whole lot of work on him. We wouldn't have known a lot about him, but they're saying this week, let's just hit him on, even on the way to a breakdown, get him out of the way. He's a nuisance, you know, and I think, like, Joe, these games, they're only half time. That's what's brilliant about the back-to-back Europe games.
Yeah, this competition is littered with freak results if you look at them on paper back-to-back. So Ulster went to the Stoop and were 17-5 winners over Harlequins. It puts them back somewhere in the mix in their pool. La Rochelle had a bonus point win, so they're still 7 points clear of Ulster. It was Stockdale with the only try, and then John Cooney was man of the match and really good, kicked four penalties. The conditions were terrible, I suppose. That dictated the nature of the game, and Ulster seemed to deal with it better.
Yeah, absolutely. I watched it. I actually felt sick watching it, just due to the weather conditions. It was like the cameraman thought, you know, I'm just going to cover the whole pitch here and hope that the ball is somewhere there. So yeah. It was, it was brilliant for Ulster. I'll be honest with you, I just thought they were done in the competition and didn't, you know, wasn't really looking forward to it. But I just think it was a great performance. And the thing is, Quins are done now in that competition. So, you know, a five-pointer next week with a tight turnaround and Ulster are back in it. And I think where Ulster are at the moment, backs to the wall and cup final rugby every week is what they need and want. And I think they had this, you know, against Harlequins, lose and they were gone. And I think that could actually stand them well. But there was, you know, there was great performances, you named them there. I thought Ian Henderson was great again and really brought some of that international form home, which, you know, that's what you need now. You need guys stepping up to the mark. He, you know, he's a line now and he's got to lead the way. You can't always be left to the likes of Rory, you know, and especially in the leadership role.
It was an interesting comment from John Kingston after the game saying we haven't been in the competition for 3 to 4 years, so we're not just going to bounce back in and look to win it. So in terms of the expectation levels he's setting out amongst his own squad, I think there's a level of acceptance to say, well, we're actually okay going out at the group stages in Europe this year. That probably spoke volumes for their ambition, you know, to have a comment like that after the game. And I think it also suggests next week
5 points,
you know, should be a 5-pointer for Ulster.
That would be classed as a grand day in Connacht during your time there, I presume.
A grand day?
Yeah. Weather-wise. Fine.
Yeah.
Easy. No, it was fairly brutal. So a brilliant win under the circumstances. And then we're kind of out of time, but as I mentioned, Connacht came back from 16 points down to beat Breve, which was no bad thing. Kieran Keane, I think the whole team mentally lifted their game. We were properly up for this one. So that's certainly a much-needed boost for Connacht. Lads, we'll leave it there. Brilliant stuff. Thanks a million, Dunica.
Come on, Joe. See
Andy.
Thanks
a million, Andy.
Cheers, Joe. See you, Dunica.
We'll take a short break.
Off the Ball on Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.